From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's good to have an old friend back, Barry Levinson, who has directed so many actors into great performances. And we were just talking about the terrific opening of the movie, his first film, Diner. His new movie for HBO is Paterno, starring Al Pacino. But his association with Al Pacino goes back to And Justice for All, which got Pacino a Best Actor nomination, the script that Levinson wrote. And that movie, like Paterno, although Paterno's not a comedy, that movie and so many of your movies, for me, are about characters who are in a situation. There's one character who's so wedded to his present that he doesn't see the past.
Right.
And that character, for example, in Justice for All, would be John Forsythe, who is so wedded to this thing he's built around himself, he can't see beyond that. And the Pacino character is a person who can see past, present, and future. And here those two extremes are between Joe Paterno and Sarah, the reporter, who's following this thing and who's been there. And so even though the movie's called Paterno, it's about a lot more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are two specifically different stories. One is Sarah Gannon, who 1 year out of Penn State, and she's now a journalist in Harrisburg, young girl, knew the world of Penn State, who's following the story, breaks the story, nobody pays attention to the story, and then 6 months later, it explodes, and then all the media comes, and she's the one who's basically knows the most about it all. And that's her story, which leads to her winning a Pulitzer Prize, which is extraordinary, the age of 22. And on the other hand, you've got Paterno's story, which is in a sense told from the perspective of an MRI machine, because in the 35 minutes that he's in an MRI machine, he's really layer by layer by layer is what the MRI does. And layer by layer, he's thinking back to all of the events and trying to put it together in his mind. So those are the two separate stories that are running simultaneously through the film.
But those juxtapositions between experience and then how experience can close you off to the world,
yeah,
and lack of experience, are these things that you trade on a lot in your films?
I don't know that I consciously do. You know, I mean, I think in many ways you'd have to look back and go, oh, yeah, I see what, you know what I mean? Because you're working on instinct, at least I am.
Yeah?
Because I can't sit there and there are those people who can lay it out in that. I need to kind of get inside of it, and then I begin to sort it out about how would I approach it, what do I do, what's this character, because I am going into the character. The character is always what always fascinates me. So I'm always going inside of it. And then how can you show this moment? How would you do this? What would you do here? How do you build on that? And so I start inside of it rather than on the outside of it.
But I think, though, that because that becomes a really interesting way to offer us almost an audience surrogate, is that person who's trying to figure out this world that exists that they have interest in. Again, and that's why I find myself, and I end up rewatching And Justice for All, immediately after I watched Return, I thought, well, it's funny, but it just kicked these gears for me. And then just watching a bunch of your stuff, I found that happens so often. And I just wonder if you found that, as your entry into the world of writing, that because you did come in a way like being surrounded by people with experience, you found that was a way to sort of get your own bearings.
Mm-hmm. But in the end of the day, you only go on instinct for me.
Sure.
Because what makes a character work? You know, how does a character function? How does a character interrelate with other people? What is it that we don't say as opposed to what is it that we do say? And if you can build that, then you end up with a character that surprises you and in a sense pulls you in to the point that that you want to know more, and then you're wondering about this. So you can do some of the smaller moments, not the bigger moments. And that's where I think live and breathe. It's in those small moments that can be revealing if you've said it correctly.
Well, some of those small moments, though, really occur in places where people live for you, literally in their homes. That happens a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can go to Rain Man, or we can even go to Madoff. I mean, so many of these things you've done, not only recently, but in your career, have been about the way people are in their houses. And there's something about dramatizing what seems like it's quotidian, but in fact reveals a lot about a person.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we don't always have extraordinary moments, you know, these big moments, you know, our lives are not filled with, yeah, and then we had this gunfight and, you know what I mean? And yeah, I was involved in this car chase and I was, you know, that's not our, that's not the way we live.
You're ruining the movie business for everybody. Come on, Barry.
There's plenty of those. Believe me, I'm not gonna be cutting back on the superhero world. But my interest lies in people, you know, people. That they're fascinating if you can get inside of them, and that's what we're doing most of our lives. We're dealing with other people, whether it's at work, whether it's at home. You know, how do we get through the day? How do we get through the week, the month, the year? You know, what is the ordinary life in a way? Not the extraordinary life. And the ordinary life is fascinating. It's fascinating. And so that intrigues me most of all.
My guest, who's reminding me he has a background in comedy, is Barry Levinson. His new film is director is Paterno for HBO is The Treatment. But I guess I'm asking these things is because that idea of finding where the drama is in the real world, your characters are all very specifically grounded in the real world. I mean, a lot of times they tend to be incredibly capable people, and you actually like that idea. I mean, we get to see how skilled Tim Daly is at his job in Diner and how good these guys are in Tin Men and the families and building these empires in Avalon, but Madoff as well. But I'm wondering, is it just growing up and seeing the way drama's played out in the real world to you? Is that something you want to bring to the screen as well? Because so much of this, again, is real world stuff. And the idea of bringing somebody like Joe Paterno, who for most of us exists as a guy we saw on ESPN or read about in Sports Illustrated, is this figure with this massive head and shoulders. And he was actually a little guy.
Yeah.
But bringing him down to earth so we can see that he's an earthly figure who should be able to understand more of his world and the damage he's done than he does.
True. True. That's what makes it so fascinating. That's what makes it, in a sense, a true tragedy. That because he either didn't see what he saw, didn't understand what he heard, or was so preoccupied that he didn't pay attention to anything except his focus of football. You know, we're not going to answer that particular question. But look what happened. You know, look what happened when someone didn't see the signs and ultimately act on it. And that's the great tragedy of a man who was referred to as a great educator, a great humanitarian, a man who did all of these particular things.
He graduated 85% of his athletic.
Exactly. All of those things and didn't either see or act accordingly, that none of this would have played out beyond that first, you know, boy and that abuse. If he would have just, you know, read the signs or taken the time or who knows what. I mean, we can't, you know, I think part of that is the mystery that we're never going to ever totally understand. But he did say at some point, does anybody believe that we couldn't have done more? He says that in the film, how different it all would have been. And ultimately his reputation, the university's reputation, and to those boys who were victimized, all would have been changed if someone had just that focus on that very first person who spoke up. And what happened, they buried it, and there was another abuse, and then ultimately it exploded. And you can't bury those voices.
See, I guess I wonder if part of this for you was in the shaping of this material, there's a last thing that I'm not going to give away that is a shocker and B, shows the level of his delusion. And it's a terrific scene, by the way. It's almost like an All the President's Men kind of scene in terms of where you stage it and then you pull it back and we see that she's kind of this small figure and this story's going to keep growing and growing, even though she's clearly determined to dig out stuff. But I just wonder if taking this guy and basically treating the story in this way like it's a mystery almost, that you're talking about unraveling all these layers as the MRI penetrates, but there are also layers he can't even see. I mean, he's so wedded right to this image that he probably doesn't even remember this thing that comes up at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that's the simplicity of the moment, you know, without all of the bells and whistles of it, you know, resonates so well. You know, you just try to figure out how do I place that moment that it'll have the necessary weight without trying to be melodramatic about any of it. And that's always a hard task, is how do we get away from, we don't want to be melodramatic. We don't want to, you know, you're always trying to find, cut through it so that you're getting a sort of a more, a clearer, more behavioral moment. That would be the key, I guess.
It's funny because we were just talking before we got started here about Best Years of Our Lives, which is a movie that's very much grounded in behavior.
Yep.
And about people reacting and actually taking place in real homes and lots of places, lots of houses. We get to see people living their lives. And as we're talking, the more we talk, I can see the impact that film had on you, just the way it played out. This really would seem like what could be incredibly mundane in the wrong hands was filled with drama, actually.
Well, I mean, Best Years of Life is brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. And I've seen it, I don't know how many times. And I could still, like, watch it. You know, it's not like, you know, well, you've already seen it. So, you know, somebody will say, but didn't you already see it? Yeah, but I like to watch again. I like the moment when this happens. I like that. I like the way that he's looking at that. You know, those moments, those behavioral moments. And I can watch those over and over again. And that shows in a very kind of stark way, in a sense, men returning from war with either the visible signs of the war in terms of the one character, you know, loses his hands, or the
sure,
other
Harold
one
Russell,
who,
yeah.
You know, each one has their own dilemma post-war. And how do you tell that story? And Wyler is brilliant in his staging of it, in his camera. We were talking, you know, most people don't talk about him in terms of his camera, but it's his restraint to just let a moment just be and let it all happen within the frame is great work. And he's trying to just show, because what happens is if you chase behavior in terms of a camera, and then that camera goes a little too far, then what happens is it undercuts the behavior. And then it becomes a sort of a theatrical version of behavior as opposed to the simplicity of behavior. And that's always a tough match, you know, because you're trying to say, how do I just – all I need to do is be here, you know. And if it's basically – the camera's in the right place and the light is there and the whatever and that actor is really in the moment, it'll be an effective moment. Let's just let it be. We don't need to add to it. We don't have to do any trickery. The simplicity, I mean, that's what you try to look for is the simplicity, because the simplicity, in a sense, creates the greatest complexity. You know what I mean? Because all of a sudden, we have as an audience, various emotions, you know, are running through us as we just watch a moment. Without the bells and whistles.
We're going to take a break. My guest is director Barry Levinson. His new film is Paterno. I'm going to try to come up with something important to say. It's the treatment this morning. Come stay with us.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Earn your graduate degree in a flexible online format from University of Southern California and learn from faculty at the top of their fields in areas such as business, health, law, engineering, psychology, communications, and more. Explore your options today at online.usc.edu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. I'm still unimportant, but it's the treatment. My guest is Barry Levinson, whose new film's director is Paterno for HBO. And as we were talking during the break, one of the things that you go back to a lot, too, that's actually been the center of so many of your films, is confidence plays an enormous part in these films. There's often a character, almost always a character, who's extremely confident. We see it here in Paterno. We saw it in Madoff. We can see it go back to any number of the films. Anything you've done, in fact, there's been a character with an enormous amount of confidence. Going back to the beginning with Boogie and Diner, you've got these guys, these people, I should say, who have these stores of confidence. And there's something about that character that attracts you too, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a confidence, but there's also behind the confidence is the insecurity. And that's one of the ways we cover up, by being super confident, you know, is the way we cover up the fact that we're not so sure about things and that we have all our kind of fears and anxieties.
Yeah, that's true. But there are often people in these movies who are trying to get at points and can't do that. And maybe if we go back to the example of Paterno, that he can be so specific. I mean, when he's working, there's actually no wasted language with him. Mm-hmm. And again, I think about so often how the characters, when they're being confident, are really precise with their language and know exactly the effects that the words are having. I'm just wondering what the analogs are for you with this, because this has to come from somewhere. All these things that you're saying are kind of instinctive, but I just wonder the observations you pull, because just watching things to get ready for this, I find myself coming across so many of these things that were touchstones in your work for me.
Let me go back to, here would be a couple lines from Casablanca, which is about exposition that is basically covered up. In the very early part of the movie, Claude Rains is sitting with Humphrey Bogart. And he said, you know, Rick, I always wondered, you know, what brought you to Casablanca, right? And he said, the water.
I came here for the waters.
I came here for the waters. He said, but Rick, you know, Casablanca is a desert. And he said, I was misinformed, right? So it's a great little exchange. But what the writer did is he needed to tell the audience that he hasn't been there for 30 years. Somehow it's somewhat recent. Why? He's not going to tell you, but he's laying that out. But it's covered by this little sleight of hand and humor. And so he buried it rather than, you know, I was always wondering, you know, when you came to Casablanca, and where'd you come from? I was in Paris. Why were you in Paris? You know, now you're getting into what I would call information. And there's nothing to me more boring in a film than information. You have to find a way to distill the information to make it interesting enough that the audience is not just digesting information, but they're digesting the characters' ability to talk to someone that engages us beyond information.
It's funny you're saying this, because you're talking about information, right? The last few stories you've done for HBO between Kevorkian and Madoff, now this, are the stories that we think we know. We think we have some understanding, right? Because they've been so heavily reported. They're big stories. And I wonder what it is that attracted you to them, because you want, clearly part of this view is trying to find out a way to tell some part of the story that we haven't seen before. But what is it that, because again, these are all,
we have to try to figure out how to get inside it. There was a moment when I met Kevorkian before we started filming. And you would assume, well, this is this very serious man, because he's dealing with a very serious topic, right? With enormous commitment to that. And we're sitting around and someone came in and said, Jack, would you like some coffee? And he said, yeah. And they said, decaf? And he said, no, decaf is for cowards. And I thought that was such a funny line, you know, from Kevorkian, Jack Kevorkian. It was humorous. And in that moment I went, oh, we have to find that in this screenplay, because it is so fascinating. Otherwise, he's just this pure crusader. But we have to get beyond that. We have to get the man that had this sense of humor about him, you know, et cetera. And he had this belief in that the individual has the right, you know, in terms of their situation, in terms of, you know, to die, that right. But that, in a sense, was like, well, that's, we have to explore that. We have to get that to be, otherwise we don't have a full character. Then we're not as invested. And that's what you try to find.
It's the treatment. We're talking about Octane Coffee and Jack Kevorkian with my guest, Barry Levinson, whose new film is Paterno for HBO. What was it, though, about Paterno. I mean, you found your way into Kevorkian through talking to him.
Right.
But you didn't obviously have that advantage with Paterno. What was it about that? I mean, because you've done so many different kinds of films, basically historical epics about your own family, adaptations, sci-fi, true crime stories. What was it about this story, especially given that you wouldn't have the kind of access that you might have had to other things, that made you want to do it?
Because he was literally, you know, the king of Happy Valley. You know, he was the emperor. He was revered. He was an educator, humanitarian. All of these things that are said about, you know, this man. And this situation happened, you know, under his nose. You know, this abuse of young boys under his nose. And how would he not know what went on? But it ultimately totally brings him down and destroys his reputation. And it all basically happens in a two-week period. He wins the 409th game, the winningest coach in the history of college football. 10 days later, the scandal explodes. The media is at his doorstep, you know, wanting to know. His family is in, doesn't understand what has happened, and he's ultimately brought down. And you go, well, this wasn't like a guy who was a villainous guy, you know? So that's an interesting, I mean, that is like a Greek tragedy in a sense. So you go, well, that's interesting. That's interesting to look into. On the other hand, someone said to me before I started, and I thought it was an odd moment, they said, so what's going to be your agenda on this film? And I said, well, I don't have an agenda. I just want to like tell the story about this man as best as I can tell it with a certain humanity to it all. Because the more invested we are in Paterno, you know, the more of a tragedy it becomes. And so I just want to tell that story.
It's interesting, too, because I just find myself thinking about the number of things you've done that have dealt with corruption at the corrupted institutions. I'm going with the Sleepers or the investment world of Madoff. And that idea of this thing that exists, and in effect, Paterno was an institution.
Yeah.
And understanding why institutions are the way they are is something I feel that interests you too.
Well, because they all, not all, I shouldn't say that, so many of them become not what you assume they are. And that, I think, is frightening. You know, so whether it be the police, well, no, they're not all, you know, this. There are these things that take place. And all facets of our lives, there'd be nothing better if everything was exactly the way it's supposed to be. This is good, this is bad. You know, this is good here, then this is bad. And that's what we'd like it to be, but it's not. It's more complicated and it has more shades of, you know, gray to it. And that, in a sense, is upsetting, especially when you take someone that is so idolized and revered in the case of Joe Paterno.
But again, I'm thinking back to Injustice for All, which is also beginning of your career, you're looking at an institution that's completely corrupted.
Yeah.
That is so, its own momentum is pushing it forward so much that it's basically doing damage where it maybe started off with, clearly in the case of our justice system, the best of intentions. And obviously that must have been the case for Paterno as well.
Yeah.
But this idea, this thing that suddenly it's become this thing that's kind of unstoppable and takes up so much space, the idea of asking questions about it is something that fascinates you too, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, because it's not what – nothing is what it seems to be.
But it's also – in some ways, it's almost like peering into the heart of what movies are or entertainment some weird way. You know, these things that this institution of Hollywood, for example, is supposed to be one thing but turns out to be something else. I mean, this idea like burrowing – was that your experience when you first went out into and start to see what the movie business was like, that you were kind of surprised that it wasn't this thing you thought it was?
Well, I never knew what it was. You know what I mean?
Did you have ideas from watching movies as a kid, though?
Well, I went to movies. I saw that, you know, and that. But so when I came out to L.A., I never, ever anticipated getting into the business. It didn't occur to me.
No?
No. I had no real ambition specifically. My biggest ambition was not to work in my father's appliance store. That was my... That is my biggest ambition in life. And then I went step by step to, you know, ultimately working, studying for 2 years, you know, with an acting group. And I was there every day for 2 years. And I did scene study, and then I did improv stuff and all of that. And then I began to write some things down. And I worked with Craig T. Nelson.
So you started radio, yeah, exactly.
And then we started doing clubs and all of those particular things. And then it was step by step. And then I'm going to try to write a screenplay. You know, and then I got one of those books, and you got to say,
did
fade
you?
In. Yeah, you got fade in. I can't remember the name of it, you know, interior hallway day, you know, first time I typed that. I was very excited that I even got the mechanics of that right. And I'd look through how you do that. And so, you know, I went through all of those things with all of these, you know, people that I would meet. I'll just tell you one thing. We're getting off topic, but someone said, you know, I know this producer guy, and you know, blah blah blah. You know, I could show him the screenplay. I said, oh yeah, okay. You know, so he's a week later said he read it, he loved it, he'd like to meet you. And I went, oh, that's very nice. So I go to meet him, and it's this guy. I should have known this guy's not exactly one of the top guys in the business, because it looked like some rundown, you know, second story office, you know, that was like a bail bondsman kind of an office. So the guy said, you know, it's a terrific screenplay. It's 70% there. And I said, so what do you want to do? He said, fix the 30%, then it's gold. This is gold. I said, okay. What 30% do we have to fix? He says, the 30% that doesn't work. I said, okay, but you like the 70%. Yes, that's fantastic. Fix the 30. Come back when you fix the 30. I said, what 30? He said, didn't you hear me? The 30% that doesn't work. I said, I know you say that, but I don't know what 30% doesn't work. And he said, what do you want me to do? You want me to rewrite the 30%? Go fix the 30%. I have to tell you, this is a longer conversation. I said, I got it. 70% is great. 30% doesn't work. What 30%? He said, are you a writer or are you not a writer? And then I, at that moment, it occurred to me in my naivete, this is not going to work out. And there's that moment of, oh God, this isn't going to work out. This is. And then I finally left. That was my introduction to meeting a producer early on in the process.
Well, thanks for taking the moment to tell a serious story about the business. I have to ask you as a last question, and I'm sorry we're almost out of time. These things always go so fast. Tell me about your first meeting with Al Pacino.
The first time I met Al was Norman Jewison,
who did Injustice for All,
and he invited us to come to the rehearsal period.
Wow.
And we were there. It was very kind of him. And we were there, and, you know, they would go through the scenes, and we were around during that period of time. And so, you know, we got to talk a little bit early on, and that was, you know, the beginning of, you know, suddenly meeting an actor and, you know, a great actor. And we were really quite fortunate that, you know, he responded to the material.
You got to come back. We're out of time, and tell us more stories about your adventures in the screen trade. By the way, the movie's really good. Thanks so much for being here, Barry.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
My guest is Barry Levinson. He survived to make Paterno for HBO, his newest film. Recording engineer here at Argo Studios in New York is Ivan Curry. The show is mixed by Kat Yor, is edited by Blake Vitus, his associate producer. I'd be happy if I got 30% right all the time. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.